After a blowout loss on Sunday, the Heat responded with a gritty effort versus the Minnesota Timberwolves the next night, but it didn't matter. They lost their fourth straight road game and made Heat history in the process. The team keeps finding new creative ways to lose, and maybe there's something positive to take away from that as we break down the loss and look ahead to what's next on tonight's Locked On Heat.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily podcast on the Miami Heat. However you might be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or your favorite podcast app, thank you for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here with David Ramil. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/lockedonNBA. After leading by as many as 15 early in the game, the Heat got outscored by the Timberwolves 37-19 in the third quarter. And though they did get it close late again, they made some costly mistakes in the final moments. They lose to the Timberwolves 105-101. No Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, Gabe Vincent, Duncan Robinson, all those guys still out. But this is still a tough one to accept. David, where did you think the Heat lost this game?
The third quarter, obviously, they fell apart there. Watching their offense discombobulate and just being able to, like, they couldn't muster anything offensively. Defensively, they were getting torched by Cat. Anthony Edwards had 18 of his 22 points in the second half. He seemed to catch fire later on. Then Jaden McDaniels, who's had big games against Miami in the past, or at least it feels that way, seemed to come to life, also scoring 14 points in the second half. So they just gave up costly errors there. They were turning the ball over the way they had it in the first half. They actually really did a good job controlling the ball and managing it well in the first half. Again, building that 15-point lead. And in the second and that third quarter in particular, they just totally fell apart. I don't know that you can point to any one thing. It just felt like they were tired. They were lost their purpose there for a little bit. Again, from 15 points up to 8 points down, that's the game right there. But give this team credit. Like, I mean, we talked yesterday after the Cavs loss, and that was such a bad, bad game that, you know, it looked like they had no effort, no purpose, no identity. They just didn't seem like they cared about being out there at all. That wasn't the case tonight. Kyle Lowry showed a little pep, took a big shot when they needed it. Caleb Martin, gritty, you know, doing what he had to do defensively. Bam Adebayo coming up with big play after big play. It just seemed like they were tying things together, getting great performances out of Haywood Highsmith after the, you know, a really, really bad performance from him on Sunday. And so they were able to climb back and take, you know, take over a 2-point lead, but ultimately not enough. And then in the fourth quarter there, just it didn't seem, I guess they kind of just burned out after having given so much up for the first 45 minutes. They had nothing left to give in the last three.
Second night of a back-to-back worth mentioning. You're still without all your guys, all the injuries that I already mentioned, plus the fact that Victor Oladipo and Omer Yurtseven still haven't played for them yet this season. So, you know, it is draining, right? And you want to give them a little bit of a benefit of the doubt, considering it was the second night of a back-to-back against a team. I think Minnesota, this is their fourth win in a row, so they're on a little bit of a hot streak, and you're without some of your best players. So all of that said, I actually agree with you. I was really impressed with what this team was able to put together in the first half. I actually thought this was a really well-coached game by Eric Spoelstra. He came in with maybe his best game plan of the season, all things considered. You know, he comes in, they're playing like 60, 70 possessions of zone each of the last couple of games without their guys. It's becoming really predictable. The Cavaliers were able to make a tailor-made game plan to punch Miami's zone. And so he's like, look, I'm just not going to let that happen again. Minnesota obviously figured that they'd be coming in playing zone with Bam and Jovic in that starting lineup to start the game. And he immediately comes out first couple of possessions just playing man-to-man. And I think that threw off Minnesota initially. And then they went back into the zone and went back and forth. And that just threw off Minnesota enough. Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert just couldn't figure it out. Towns actually had a really good game statistically. I thought overall played a very poor game, which, by the way, is the story of Karl-Anthony Towns, not just for tonight. But but Gobert just couldn't figure it out either until late. He was on the free throw line and ended up winning Minnesota the game that way. But so Spo comes in with that lineup. He comes in with that game plan. The other part of the game plan that I really liked was having Bam bring the ball up in order to stretch Minnesota's two big lineups, specifically Gobert, out and get him away from the basket. I thought that was a really neat kind of thing to do, to really leverage Bam's strengths against Gobert's weaknesses. And Bam completely outplayed Rudy Gobert tonight. That's not even a question. And so all of that is great. The concerning part is that they still lost despite playing well. I know that they blew a 27-5 run in the third quarter. That was bad. They were not playing well during that 5-6 minute stretch. But beyond that, I thought they won the game. And so to lose this game because of one extended run in the third quarter, that to me is the concerning part.
But it seems like a recurring theme, right? It's happened a number of times. Recent losses show that at least on a couple of occasions, they've given up 21-point runs pretty easily. They just don't have the horses defensively, or they're exhausted physically, mentally, whatever you want to call it. And again, there are so many different possibilities that it's hard to pinpoint any. And the players won't pinpoint any one thing. We just didn't do it defensively. That's kind of a catch-all phrase that you need something a little bit more specific. Was it, personnel? Was it effort? Was it a combination of the two? They're not going to nail it down, and we can't either. So at the same time, you're looking at what happened and what continues to happen in terms of these giving up these big leads, and it just seems like an accumulation of really just bad everything. Personnel, effort, a combination of the two. And that just seems to be the theme for this team. And I was just doing a quick summation of the game for our Locked On Now show. And I don't know what to take from this loss, because it feels more encouraging than last night's loss against the Cavs. And at the same time, it's just a different way of losing. And the team hasn't been either healthy or consistent enough in any one direction, whether it's winning or losing, to draw any kind of real general identity out of the 18 games they played. Yeah. We were going to talk about this later on in the week. The 20 game mark was such an important one for Pat Riley, the front office, to determine what this team is. I don't know that you can have a clear question or identity or just summation of what this group is, because Jimmy's missed time. Everybody's missed time from one point to another. The key reserves in Victor Oladipo and Omer Yurtseven haven't played a single minute. That's impossible to really infer anything that's going to be
fair.
I don't know how to take what we've seen through 18 games and extrapolate over the next 60 something games. 64.
I totally understand that. The one thing I do think we can extrapolate, though, is the fact that this team is old and will be injured again, right? Like, everybody wants to chalk up the injuries to bad luck. This is the roster that he'd assembled. It's the second oldest team in the league. Jimmy Butler misses 20 games a season. Right, we act like that's not the case, but it's true. Victor Oladipo, the injury concerns and the health concerns there are not surprising in the least bit. This is the team that this front office constructed. It is an injury-prone team. It is a team that is going to face injuries at some point in the year. The first 20 games, the last 20 games, the middle 20 games, I don't know when. Probably at points during all of those stretches. And so it shouldn't be surprising, and you can't chalk it up to bad luck. This is a team that is built to get hurt. And you look at the box score tonight, period by period scoring for Miami, 33 points in the first quarter, 27 points in the second quarter, 19 in the third, 22 in the fourth. It's going down. And that's been sort of the tale for this Heat team all season long, is that they're able to come out with a good game plan and with energy and with some motivation. And that's enough to carry you for 12 to 24 minutes. But it's not enough to carry you through an entire game and to win you a game. And that's the problem that Miami is facing, is yes, they are injured now. They are depleted now. But I just don't see a world in which this Heat team, this roster, is ever fully healthy, because we just don't really see it. Not just this season, David, but for the 3 years that we've basically seen this core together, they just haven't been healthy for long stretches. Their healthiest stretch was probably in the bubble playoffs after getting a couple of months off. And they went to the finals, and that's sort of the ceiling of this team. Best case scenario, I just don't see them getting there, because they are just an injured team all the time.
This season and the roster feels like a house of cards, right?
Yeah.
It started with Victor Oladipo and Yurtseven, because you were counting on the possibility of, let's say Tyler doesn't, and maybe you can even say that he hasn't thrived as a starter, but you could at least expect Oladipo to provide high-level defense, attacking offense, just general veteran leadership and things of that sort to that secondary unit. And then you don't have to rely so much on guys like Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, or anybody else.
Yeah.
But then you have those injuries. So you're 7-2, and all of a sudden you're a much smaller lineup. You're giving up these huge rebounding deficits. There's no way to overcome that because you just don't have the personnel. And then it's one thing after another starts to topple. With those injuries, it kind of just begins to kind of snowball. Yep. And then all of a sudden, you're thrusting guys into the starting lineup that have no right to be there, like Max Strus or Gabe Vincent or anybody else. They shouldn't be getting those kind of heavy minutes. Dwayne Dedmon at this stage in his career shouldn't be playing those extended minutes. You'd love to be able to have Yurtseven to plug in there, and that's just not an option. You don't have anybody else.
To your point, this is a team that mines and develops undrafted talent in order to complement its core. But the core is so injured so often that these undrafted players are asked to do so much more than they ought to be asked to do. You mentioned Max Strus. We haven't really talked a lot about him. It was a rough last couple of minutes for him tonight. We are going to talk about that more next when we get to Blame Pie. But first, today's episode of Locked On Heat is brought to you by Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts. Browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget across the US, UK, Canada, and coming soon to Australia. Book a spacious SUV or minivan for a family road trip. Get a classic or luxury car for a special event, birthday, or holiday. Find affordable economy cars if you're on a budget and just need to get from A to B. Test drive that new electric vehicle that you've had your eye on to see how it fits in your everyday life. Many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Forget boring rental cars and find your drive at Turo.com. Back here with Locked On Heat. Thank you for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. For your next listen, check out the Locked On Sports Today podcast, the biggest stories of the day, plus instant reactions, big game recaps, and the take of the day. It's available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. Well, David, that smell you smell is the smelly smell of another smelly loss. It is time to hand out some more blame pie.
I've got to say, I'm starting to feel like a sanitation worker or something. Like, I'm so used to the smelly smell that we've been smelling that I don't even know if I can smell it anymore.
Not even all that smelly anymore.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, it's blame pie, I guess, or whatever's cooking.
That's what it smells like here, I guess. It's just it's what it always smells like in Miami.
Constant stink hanging around this locker room.
Let's talk about Max Strus.
Speaking of stink, that's unfair.
It's not, though, because
it's not. He is rough. He's
I know. Rough. What was the final box score? Some people might look at that and just say, you know what? He wasn't that bad. And look, offensively, he was Miami's second leading scorer behind Kyle Lowry. It did take him.
Problem.
But it did take him 20.
That's the problem.
It is. And it took him 23 shots to get 19 points. So, you know, not great. Here's the real sticking point.
Some of those, kind of scores around the league that are 7 of 23 and they get to the line 8 or 9 times. Yeah. He got to the line once.
Right.
That's not
look, you don't want Max Strus doing his best, like Jordan Clarkson impression. That's not ideally what he's supposed to be doing here. And he kind of did try to do that late. Look, let's just go over the last couple minutes here. The Heat down 2 with 1:23 left. Max Strus just kind of loses the ball, throws it out of bounds. I don't even not really sure what happened. Turnover on Max Strus. All right. Down 4 with 57 seconds left. For some reason, after coughing up the ball, brings it up, sees D'Angelo Russell in front of him, who is not a good defender, but he's better than I think his reputation is now. He's worked harder in Minnesota. I'll give him credit for that. And he's working hard on this possession. And Max Strus just doesn't care. I think he just sees D'Angelo Russell in front of him, gets tunnel vision, and just had made up his mind that he's going to take a shot. The ball never leaves his hands. He never passes it to another teammate. And he just sort of chucks up this off-the-dribble three-pointer, airballs it, another turnover. And so I'm not really sure what happened there. The Heat are down 4. Kyle Lowry, the Heat get a stop. Lowry coast-to-coast gets a layup, brings the Heat back to within 2. Down 2 with 9.2 seconds left. The Heat get a stop. Like I said, get a stop. Lowry, coast-to-coast layup, brings them to 2. 9.2 seconds left. Minnesota's working their offense. They're not getting anything. There's 4 seconds left on the shot clock. They entry pass it into Rudy Gobert, I don't know, 12 feet away from the basket? Yeah. Like, exactly sort of where you want Gobert to have the ball because he can't do anything with it from that distance. And Max Strus just fouls him in the back. And he sends Gobert to the line. Rudy Gobert ends up winning the game on free throws. Miami gets a sort of this fake last chance possession down 4. Bam Adebayo takes a three at the end. It didn't matter. Who cares? The game was already over. So Max Strus, you don't want to say he cost the Heat the game, but the Heat, after blowing their 15-point lead, the big 21-5 run, the 27-5 run by Minnesota, all this stuff, they scratch claw, end up retaking the lead midway through the fourth quarter, and it's kind of going back and forth there. They have a chance to win the game, and Max Strus, just three inexcusable plays in a row. Maybe the roughest end of a game of Max Strus for his career.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think this is the consistent theme, you know, what I was hinting at before. Like, he shouldn't be in this position in the first place. He shouldn't have to take – he shouldn't be out there taking 23 field goal attempts. But that's just the way that this season has shaped up, because they've been missing so many key players. Yes. And he's been thrust into a starting role and having it in tonight's situation, at least, be their primary offensive player. And that's never a good place for him. And then defensively, like – I know the comparison to Duncan Robinson has been a convenient one, because they're both white, they're both shooters. And so you look at Duncan's struggles last year, and then you know, Max's rise throughout last season, where he improved defensively. And it's like, oh, okay, well, he's so much better than Duncan that you can just kind of accept that this is who he is. And he's just he's a better version of Duncan. He dunks, right? Which is something that Duncan Robinson does not do. He like drives, he can put the ball down, which again, something that Duncan has historically not really shown much of. And so there's this comparison that Max is a much better version of what Duncan is. They're two completely different players, one, but they're also overstating a lot of what Max does well. And that I don't know that he is as good as a lot of people might believe that he is.
It's been rough defensively for him. Yeah. He's missing a lot of simple, easy rotation reads, multiple games in a row now. Like, he's strung together a few bad games defensively in a row. It's not been good for him. It's been a tough stretch.
Right.
So how many slices of blame pie to Max Strus? I think we need to almost alter it, like, because we agree that injuries are maybe the primary reason why Miami lost this game. That said, they did have a chance late. Max Strus, some costly things at the end there. I don't want to give them all 10. I don't really know how much more to hand out. So I don't think we have to give out 10 slices of blame pie tonight. I just chalking it up to injuries and stuff. But, like, what feels appropriate to give to Max?
Again, given the context of why he struggled as much as he did, because he was asked and forced to do more because of a depleted lineup, maybe four slices?
I was there between 3 and 4, and don't even bring up 3.5. It's not happening.
You can't handle the math.
I can't do the math. Let's do it. Let's do it 3. We'll give him 3, right? I think that's fair. We'll give Max the benefit of the doubt there. I got no more blame pie to hand out. Like, we don't do it for injuries. That's not a thing we do. But understanding that a lot of this blame is because Jimmy Butler and Tyler. Just imagine if Jimmy or Tyler were in there. Miami's two best, most consistent offensive players all season long, or two of their three, considering where you want to put Bam in that equation. That 27-5 run when they went scoreless or they only scored 2 to 5 points for like 6 to 7 minutes. Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, they change a lot of that equation, right? And so I do think that the Heat probably win this game. They definitely are not 0-4 on this trip if they have Jimmy Butler or Tyler Hero, who didn't play a single game on this trip at all. But like I said before, there's the micro and then there's the macro. Micro, are the Heat as bad as they are right now, as their record is? No, they're not. Macro, can you really count on this team to ever really be healthy and to string it together and to hit the ceiling that you want them to hit? I don't think so either. And so that's sort of where my biggest concern is. Anybody else that you want to shout out here, good or bad?
Haywood Highsmith, okay. I think, had a great bounce back game in 20 minutes of play, 4 of 7 for the floor, 2 of 3 from 3-point range. He now has 3 3-pointers on the season, finished with 12 points. Great effort. Like, he went up a 7-inch, 8-inch difference in height to Rudy Gobert, and he just grabbed the rebound right out of Rudy's, dumbfounded hands. It was great effort from him. He seemed like he really took Sunday's performance to heart, because he had been so particularly bad. I don't know if he went in after the loss at Cleveland and tried to shoot free throws and shoved the ladder down or anything like that. But so, I don't know. Whatever it was, he turned things around, and he had a really nice effort tonight.
Credit to Kyle Lowry for that, and Kyle Lowry does deserve a shout-out. How many minutes did he play tonight? 44 minutes tonight. In a night, again, no Gabe Vincent coming off the bench. So
he struggled offensively, but you could see in his effort – he did not want to lose.
No,
I don't know what it was.
And he was visibly frustrated with some of the blown rotations by his teammates, like all that stuff. You don't want to see it. You don't want Kyle Lowry to be frustrated, but you do want him to be frustrated if there's something to be frustrated right. with. And so, right. and there was certainly a lot to be frustrated by for Lowry. So totally engaged. I loved his offensive game. I know that like 5 of 16 isn't great, but he ran that offense. He was the best guard on the floor to me all night. Even when you consider Anthony Edwards scoring 22 points for him, it took him 21 shots. Lowry deserves a lot of credit, I think, for Haywood Highsmith, because you and I talked about this after the Cleveland game, where it just feels like with Highsmith, he needs a jolt of confidence in order to do anything on the court at any moment. And I thought his game against the Wizards the other night was a really good example of it. Gets a tip in, a simple tip in, but after that, he hits his first three-pointer of the year. Before tonight, it was his only made three-pointer of the season. He's doing stuff defensively. He's more involved just because he got a tip in. He just needs to see the ball go in one time. And then next thing you know, he just sort of transforms into a different, more engaged player. Tonight, early in the game, I think Kyle Lowry recognized that. Kyle Lowry gets a wide-open three-point opportunity, passes it up because Haywood Highsmith is there in the corner with a wide-open drive along the baseline or an opportunity to do that. So Lowry just passes up the three, as a good traditional point guard would do, gives it to his teammate. Highsmith just puts the ball on the ground, makes the right read, goes right to the basket. Easy layup, also thanks to Bam Adebayo screening off Rudy Gobert out of the paint. And yep. next thing you know, Haywood Highsmith, very next possession, boom, drains a corner three-pointer. And he's totally engaged defensively. You mentioned knocking the ball out of Rudy Gobert's hands, all these things. You love to see that from Haywood Highsmith. Just a little bit of confidence
early on. Bringing
the ball up.
Like bringing the ball up. Point forward, Haywood Highsmith. I never would have expected that.
What lessons did we learn from this road trip? And why did Nikola Jovic not play down the stretch? We're going to answer those questions next. But first, David, tell the listeners about LinkedIn Jobs.
Yeah, LinkedIn Jobs. Let me see if I can pull it up. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available, and that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. Look, back in my former life, I had to do hiring for my company, and something like LinkedIn makes everything so much easier. They find all the right candidates that you need for your job. You can test them. You find out exactly what they're capable of, and then you make the job easy. It frees you up, and it gets you the right person. And that's so important in today's marketplace, because you want to have the right personnel. You just add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile, and that spreads the word that your company's hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on the candidates with just the right skills. You're not wasting any time and the experience, so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply.
All right, let's get to some questions from our listeners. This first one comes from Isaiah. Are the last couple of games the result of tired legs from a lack of personnel, or is it deeper? I think you and I have basically discussed, yes, it's deeper. It's also the same thing. I think that this team is obviously tired. They're missing a ton, half their roster, second night of a back-to-back, on the road. All of that stuff is excusable, even, I think. But the overall point is, I don't know that this ever really changes in a meaningful way for Miami, because they're just such an old, injury-prone roster.
That's fair. It's hard to predict exactly what will happen. And I'd love to be able to say that Jimmy's going to be healthy for the next 60-something games, that Tyler's going to be healthy for that stretch too, that Bam won't go down with injury at any point, that Kyle won't. You know, we haven't heard anything from him in terms of the personal reasons that kept him out for large stretches of last year too. So you wonder whether or not those might manifest at some point. Hopefully they do not. You know, but there are other players too. Again, it's just this recurring thing that you're counting on so much from all these players that might not. You know, when you're not top heavy, when you're so evenly distributed between your best player, Jimmy Butler, and your worst player, say Haywood Highsmith, and you're counting on all of them to contribute in one way, shape, or form on a night to night basis, that's not a good way to live. It's just, it's not sustainable, because if you lose a player like Jimmy, then you're counting on a guy like Highsmith, who probably isn't going to be an NBA player for a very long stretch of time. Like, I mean, I don't know that what's the ceiling for a guy like Hayward? And I don't mean to pick on him specifically, but again,
well, you could ask that. What's the ceiling for any of these undrafted guys? Again, we love the Max Strus stories, the Gabe Vincent stories, those things, the Duncan Robinson stories. They're great stories, and I do think that a team needs to be able to develop some of those guys for the back end of the roster to complement their core. The problem is that Miami is way too over-reliant on them. And look, we could talk about the fact that if Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero were there, maybe they're not relying on Max Strus to take 23 shots.
They're not.
But they won't be in the future. 8 players of the 14 on this roster, not even including the two-way guys. Two-way guys are usually undrafted, so not including them. 8 of the 14 really rostered players are undrafted. The highest drafted player on this team, the only player on the team drafted in the top 10 of his draft, is Victor Oladipo, and he hasn't played this season. This is a team that just doesn't have a whole lot of 99th percentile talent, and they are so much more over-reliant on undrafted players than any other team in the league, and it's not to bang on the undrafted players as if they can't play, but you just can't rely on them to that extent. Let's move on. Danny writes in, why would Spo trust an undrafted player, along with the theme, Jamal Kane, to close the game rather than Nikola Jovic, who was a drafted player? David, what do you think?
I don't know. That was a questionable one. I guess it comes down to defensive effort, as it so often does with Eric Spoelstra, is that you expect Kane to at least give more effort, more speed, more recognition, and the athleticism to be able to rotate more quickly in a possession-to-possession basis. Nikola, for all that he can do offensively, is still struggling defensively in terms of court awareness and does not have the physical tools yet at this point to be able to make those rotations quickly. And when Miami's defense, again, going from either zone or man-to-man or any combination of those things, you're relying on so much high IQ level play awareness and then this over-reliance on whatever physical skills you might have, that when you have a player like Jovic, who's clearly overmatched at this point in his career, I don't think it's the right situation for him perhaps to be out on the floor late in games. And so you go with a guy like Jamal Kane, who might have just a little bit more of it physically and athletically, and put him out there in that situation and hope for the best. I mean, again,
Jovic, you're 7 minutes. Jovic was seven minutes for Jovic in the third quarter. He was a minus 12. A lot of that during the huge run by Minnesota. 0 minutes in the fourth quarter for Jovic. Jamal Kane played all 12 minutes. I did find myself kind of scratching my head in the fourth quarter, wondering where Nikola Jovic was, whether or not he deserves some run. Do I think the Heat win this game if Jovic plays over Jamal Kane? No, I do not, and I think it's very inconsequential. I don't think it means anything in regards to how Spoelstra thinks of Kane over Jovic or Jovic over Kane. I don't think we need to pin those two against each other. It was just what Spo thought the best lineup was to try to win this game, and they were right there at the end. So I don't think that we need to read too much into it.
That is reflective of how Spo views Jamal Kane over Nikola Jovic. Again, and not pinning the two against each other, because, I mean, again, both of them in situations where they're probably playing more than they ought to be. But in this case, like, if you know, Eric Spoelstra is objectively looking at two players on his bench, Jovic or Kane, and he's going with one over the other, it has to be reflective of how he views Kane over Jovic.
I mean, I guess. I mean, I don't know Kane over Jovic, but Kane over Jovic in this specific situation, in this specific matchup, sure. I just don't know that he thinks Jamal Kane right now is a better player than Nikola Jovic. I don't know that he thinks Nikola Jovic is better than Jamal Kane. I have no idea what Eric Spoelstra thinks. And I think to try to draw a conclusion based on one fourth quarter in the middle of the season just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I don't think that Eric Spoelstra thinks, because he played Jamal Kane in the fourth quarter over Jovic, believes that Jamal Kane is a better player than Jovic. He started Jovic, not Jamal Kane. So you could kind of point to any data point to try to make any sort of conclusion that you want to already make. You can do the confirmation bias thing if you want. I just don't think that there's much to draw from in this game. He just went with the lineup that he thought was best at the end. Maybe he was wrong. Maybe he was right. I don't know. I don't think that the Heat win this game if Jovic is playing more minutes in the fourth quarter. But who knows? Maybe they do. This question comes from Kathy. Is there a trade that works between the Warriors and the Heat to fix both of these teams' problems? This is, I think, somebody that used to listen to me on Lockdown Warriors. So I got one for you. Would you do this, David? We don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this. I don't think the Warriors would do it, but would you do Caleb Martin for Jonathan Kuminga right now?
Yeah.
Caleb Martin's a better player than Jonathan Kuminga is right now. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But Caleb Martin also is not a power forward, and Jonathan Kuminga could at least slot in there. give the Heat some sort of upside. The talent deficit that we talk about so much. If Kuminga brings one thing to the table at this point in his career, it's just raw talent, something the Heat lack. And then for the Warriors, Caleb Martin could basically be Gary Payton II for them. Come in, be a defensive stopper, cut, hustle, all those things. He could be a rotation piece for them right away. I don't know. Just an idea.
It's a possibility. I like the idea. At the same time, I think given how the season is playing out, and again, the fact that you're relying on guys to overperform on a nightly basis, you're not looking for that occasional spark that Kuminga might and has provided over the course of his career and would do so on this roster. You're looking for a guy who, for better or worse, is going to be somewhat consistent, even if it's not consistently good or consistently great like Caleb has been. So I think Caleb is a better fit for this roster. Mm-hmm. Again, just because Miami is still, even if they're not going to win a lot this year, and there's debate whether or not they can go far in the playoffs, I still think they're capable of a deep run because, again, we've seen even this overperforming group exceed expectations and go on a deep playoff run. I don't know if it's likely. It might seem less likely at this point when they're four games under 500. But at the same time, I think you're looking at a player like Caleb, and he's just a better, more win-now player than Kuminga is.
Yeah. Biggest takeaway from the road trip is exactly what you just said, that this team is now four games under 500. They're 12th in the Eastern Conference. They're a game and a half out of the play-in picture. It's early in the season to start talking about playoff pictures and seedings and stuff like that. But hey, these losses count just as much as the ones at the end of the year. These wins count just as much as the ones at the end of the year. So this stuff matters, and the Eastern Conference is loaded. It seems like Brooklyn is sort of maybe kind of putting it together. Philadelphia, ditto for them. Toronto, Atlanta, Washington, Indiana, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Boston, all demonstrably better than the Miami Heat this season. So yeah, it's competitive. It's crowded. The Heat need to start winning some games. They've lost four in a row. Those four in a row came on the road. It was after they won three in a row prior to the road trip. They returned home Wednesday night. Maybe they can get a win. Do you have one other takeaway quickly from the road trip, other than the fact that this team is now kind of scratching and clawing to stay?
Not really about the road trip, but just looking ahead, 64 games left in the season, right? So they go 40-24 over that stretch. Maybe that's best case scenario, but that's what you look for if you're trying to stay optimistic. 40-24, that puts them at 47 wins in the season, probably good enough for a playoff seed. And that right around our preseason projections about what this team could be. So maybe, again, that's the best case scenario, but it's still a possibility even at this point in the season.
Thanks again for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Heat on your favorite podcast app and on YouTube. Ring the bell to get notified as soon as new episodes go up. For your next listen, check out the Locked On Sports Today podcast, the biggest stories of the day, plus instant reactions, big game recaps, and the take of the day. It's available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.